everybody. Mike Valoy here on the Nova M Radio Network. In case I tend to forget it towards the end of the program, happy 4th of July tomorrow. Hope you have a good time. We are going to, Molly has a birthday party to attend, and then we'll go to our neighborhood pool, and then we will go into Decatur, Georgia. Behind the courthouse, they have a grassy area and a gazebo, and there's an orchestra that plays. What is that, DeKalb Symphony Orchestra? Is that what it is, DeKalb County Symphony? They're pretty good. And then about dusk, or a little bit later, around 9 o'clock, fireworks go off. So that's our day. I wasn't going to talk about the Limbaugh $400 million deal, but I opened the New York Times today, and there's his hideous face on the front page of the business section. There it is. And talk about, there's a couple of things about the article that really kind of sunk in to me. What Limbaugh is, he's running a protection racket. This is like the stuff my Italian grandfather used to talk about from in the old country before he came here. Once he came here, he had nothing to do with La Cosa Nostra or the Black Hand Society or the Mafia or any of that stuff. But back in Italy, it was common knowledge. It was the politicians, the what we would call aldermen or city council members, so on and so on and so on. Everybody was paying off for protection. This is at a bad time in Italian history. My grandfather came here before the turn of the last century. He came here around 1898, 1897, somewhere around in there, 1896. So I used to be fascinated by the stories because, you know, mafia crime when I was a kid. My grandfather's Italian. Hey, when do we get the good stuff? Well, the good stuff never came. My grandfather was a straight-ahead Republican businessman. Couldn't speak very good English, but he knew how to read the stock reports in the Wall Street Journal. He did indeed. So when I'm reading this stuff today about Limbaugh, and I'm thinking, this is what corporate America, this is why Limbaugh, whose program really kind of sucks. I mean, he's no better and probably a lot worse than Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, Jeff Farias, me, Peter Werbe, Sam Cedar. Go right down the list. Go right down the list. I have to confess, I haven't listened to his show in a long time because I can't anymore. I can't listen to him or Neil Bortz or Sean Hannity or any of these vermin because I can't take it. But I started thinking today, $400 million, another 8 years, Clear Channel, that owns Premier Network, the syndicating agency, has decided to pay him the equivalent, $100 million signing bonus, and then $32 million a year, which is $7 million a year more, I guess, than his last contract. And I'm sitting there thinking when I read the New York Times, what does he do that makes him worth $500 million over the next 8 years? Close to $500 million. And there really is nothing. There's no intrinsic value to a Rush Limbaugh program, as there's no intrinsic value to a Mike Malloy program. It's just not there. This is talk. This is people sitting around talking. This is not the oil commodities market. This is not the gold trading market. This is not real estate. This is talk radio. So what is it then that makes someone like Rush Limbaugh worth to corporate America $400 million? And then it occurred to me, this guy is running the best protection racket in the history of media. Now, how does he do it? Well, very simply. First of all, Clear Channel or Premier no more make $32 million a year in revenue profits, at least, you know, to pay him, than Nova M makes $32 million a year in profits on this program. Where does the money come from? Well, it comes from corporate America, who make sure that Premier and Clear Channel and the people who own the Limbaugh program are adequately funded. Now, this is not uncommon in radio. It is not uncommon at all to make sure that there's an escrow account set up somewhere to cover the cost of the talent. Now, Limbaugh, what Limbaugh is paid this money to do is to provide protection for corporate America, the coal industry, the oil industry, the agribusiness industry, the pharmaceutical industrial complex, military industrial complex. Limbaugh provides protection. He sits there all day long, here at this point in his 20-year-long career, and fills the heads of the people who listen to him with the most outrageous lies. But the manner in which he does it is, that's Limbaugh's genius. It's not what he says. It's not his topics. It's not his worth. It's how he's able to get inside the heads of very weak people and convince them that corporate America and him are working for their best interest. It's astonishing. So what Limbaugh is running is a protection racket. He is like an old-time Don in an Italian village somewhere at the turn of the last century who goes around to the local farmers to make sure that the money is there so the orchards don't burn, so the olive trees are left alone. And then he goes around, because it didn't used to be bagmen that do this. It'd be the actual Don, the actual head of the family in specific areas of Italy, according to my grandfather. Then you go into the village and go to the fruit stands, and you go to the guy that cuts the heads off chickens and sells them. Anyway, you make your way around, and you collect the money. Now, we started calling it in this country the VIG, the vigorish, which is, you know, what gamblers, I'm not gamblers, but what bookies make, but it's also the protection money. So somebody has determined, probably Limbaugh himself, that he is worth $32 million a year to run a protection racket. He covers for the crimes committed by the Republican Party and corporate America. And the Republican Party and corporate America are one and the same. They are more than willing, thankful, blessed, as they say, to pay this money to Limbaugh. Now, in the New York Times article, they quoted Talkers Magazine, which is not really a magazine. It is it's run by a guy named Michael Harrison. That's not really his name. And the way you get into Talkers Magazine, they have what they call the Hot 100. It depends on how much money you spend on advertising. That's how you make their lists. Michael, whatever his last name is, the media usually turn to him. Why, I don't know. Michael Harrison's Talkers Magazine runs no polling. They keep track of nothing. What they do, what their job is, Harrison's Magazine, and he's paid off too, is to make sure that when other media want to know, well, who's number one in talk radio? Harrison is right there to say, well, Rush Limbaugh. Who's number two? Well, Sean Hannity. Who's number three? Well, Glenn Beck. And down the list it goes. So Michael is like the bagman. Limbaugh is like the Don. Limbaugh sits there and says to corporate America, you know, the citizens of this country would tear your ass apart if they ever really figured out and decide to act on what you're doing to them. So I'll tell you what. You pay me, let me see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, pay me $400 million over the next 8 years, and I'll protect your ass. I'll get out there every day and fill the airwaves. I got 800 radio stations. I got them snowed, too. It's all a big joke. But you pay me, because if you don't pay me, the hordes of unemployed Americans, the hordes of hungry people, are finally going to come out of the ether, and they're going to realize what you and I and my little imitators have been doing. And they're going to come with it for us with ropes and lighted torches. So pay me. Pay me, you sons of bitches. Feed me. Feed me. Feed me. Load of those things ain't been the same. Sick of the blues walking around. Get your
border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
21 past the hour. Okay, just a little bit more here, and I'm going to get off this topic forever. But about the pig man and the fact that he's running corporate America's protection racket against the American people, and it is so clear. It's amazing to me how I missed it all these years. But Todd in Mundelein, Illinois, sent me a breakdown. He writes, "Good evening, Mike. So Rush Limbaugh signed a new $400 million 8-year contract. I decided to crunch the numbers on this. Wish I hadn't. This is how it breaks down according to my calculations. Bear in mind, this is only approximate numbers here. The contract is 8 years, $400 million, with an approximate $100 million signing bonus included. Taking away the $100 million signing bonus, $300 million divided by 8 years comes out to $37.5 million a year. Figuring in calendar year 2009, there are about 261 potential days to broadcast. Subtract around 7 days, probably more. Those are days off for holidays. Subtract an additional 20 days, approximately for vacation. That leaves 234 potential days of blather. $37.5 million divided by 234 days it comes out to $160,256 per day. That works down to $53,418 per hour. I'm sorry, Mike, this is absolutely unbelievable to me. This lying son of a bitch should be imprisoned, not compensated to this outrageous extent. My disgust over this is overwhelming." And then Todd adds, "With the 4th of July coming tomorrow and with all the BS going on in this country today, could somebody, anybody, please tell me, just what am I supposed to be proud of about being an American? Because I sure as hell am not a proud American right now, Todd." What to be proud of? Be proud that the experiment lasted for 232 years, approximately. That's something I think that we can be proud of. I think the experiment is finished. It's over. We are in a transition period where we are going to leave what Ben Franklin said, "Madam, I've given you a republic. Keep it if you can." We're going to leave that. We have been in the process of leaving it for about the time Reagan came in. So what's that, about 30 years? We have been moving away from being a republic and into a corporatist state. Now, these are just facts. This has nothing to do with political philosophy or one person's prejudicial opinion, i.e. mine. This has to do with fact. Energy policy is now decided by energy companies. Food policy is decided by agribusiness. Just go right down the list. Healthcare is decided by pharmaceutical companies, the health insurance industry. It's not decided by doctors and patients. I mean, just keep going. I mean, seriously, and I don't care what your political persuasion is, keep going. The auto industry is decided, or CAFE standards. How many gallons per gas are we supposed to get? That's determined by the auto industry, not any consumer organization that says, "Look, what's at stake here is the air we breathe, the money we spend on gasoline, yada, yada, yada." So the transition from being a republic, a democratic republic, to being a corporatist state is almost completed. It's almost complete, if it's not already. When you look at the fact that the unemployment rate in this country now is about 9.9%, was it CNN that reported that today? If you factor in the people who've given up looking for work, this is not the people who are doing part-time jobs as greeters at Walmart or wherever. This is just people who have given up looking for work, who used to be in the middle class, who are no longer looking because they can't find anything. The unemployment rate is not 5.5. It's closer to 10. If you look at the mortgage meltdown, if you look at all of this negative, terrible, nasty stuff, and it is negative and terrible and nasty, we've had 6 months straight now of job loss. The experts on Bloomberg TV and CNBC tell us now, or told me today, we are now officially in a recession. We are fighting two wars, both of which we're losing. I understand now that they want 30,000 more troops for Afghanistan, 30,000 more Marines for Afghanistan. The head of the Joint Chiefs stood there today and said, "We need 30,000 more, and we don't have them." How do I answer that? the Marine Expeditionary Force that's been in Afghanistan that was promised, you know, this is the length of time on your tour of duty, were informed within the past 48 hours that their tour is being extended. So this is where we are. We are in, and why are we fighting in both of those countries? Don't tell me 9/11. The events that occurred on 9/11 should have resulted in a massive international global police investigation. The entire goddamn world was willing to help us, even the Iranians, especially the Iranians, on September 12th, 2001. The entire world was willing to help us track down the people who planned and organized this. Now, some people believe all they had to do is go to the White House. But let's buy the official story. It should have been an international police action. But George Bush and the corporatists who own this country turned to the international community and told them to go F themselves. That we had bigger fish to fry. And we've been frying those fish ever since. So here we are. We're in a transition state. And we're almost there.
We are redefining war on our terms.
I feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from cyber...
25 before the hour, Prairie 2 writes in about what I was just talking about the unemployment rate and this financial mess that the Republicans have got us into, especially Bush and Cheney. Mike, he writes, incredibly, the Bush crime family claims the unemployment rate did not change, even though 62,000 more people lost their jobs in June. If you drill down a little bit, you find that the jobless rate, including workers whose benefits have run out, is 9.9%. Excuse me. It also turns out that they were off a bit on the April numbers. The number of people who lost their jobs was really 2.5 times as many as originally reported. May had a similar adjustment. What do you suppose the final June numbers will be when they get around to releasing them? Jobs have gone down 6 months in a row. Keep in mind, they need to add 50,000 jobs a month to accommodate the increase in population. So the real jobless rate is much higher. Gasoline usage is down, according to numbers the oil companies have reported to the government. Oddly, though, the states are reporting traffic deaths are down between 10 and 20%. You can't fault the oil companies for getting the consumption numbers wrong. They have had to reassign their accountants to tallying profits. Exxon is rumored to have so much cash on hand that they have constructed a large money bin. The Exxon CEO is quoted as saying, quote, swimming in money is much harder than Scrooge McDuck makes it look. The other day, Dick Cheney nearly drowned, end quote. Mike in St. Paul writes, well, Mike, if a Republican is given a choice between voting for a Republican and voting for someone who acts like a Republican, he will vote for a Republican every time. I understand the political gamemanship required to win an election, but I think Obama is making a huge error here. He is not running to the center. He seems to be falling head over heels beyond the center to the godforsaken right. Now, Obama seems to be budging on the issue that we, on the left, hold to be centerpiece of our platform, the war in Iraq. Obama needs to think about his base here, which for all practical purposes consists of a great number of people who have not participated in electoral politics in a long time. Do the math. If you take African Americans, Hispanics, and young people, you have a majority that dwarfs the angry white male vote. But if Obama continues his flirtation with the far right, he's going to lose the people that helped him win the nomination. So, Barack, take a deep breath. And try to remember the people that put you in position to win, and stop listening to the idiot advisors that are telling you to run to the right. It won't work. Mike in St. Paul. Yeah, as far as the angry white male, you know what the angry white male is about? He's angry about if his head would clear, if the most evil protection racket in the history of media, the Rush Limbaugh program, were ceased to exist, the angry white male would finally realize who he's angry at. He's not angry at gay folk. He's not angry at women. He's angry at the people who keep taking every goddamn thing he has, and that's the Republican Party. Over and over and over again. It's just endless. And the so-called angry white male, who must be the dumbest two-legged creature in the history of two-legged creatures, he has to be. He has to be. The Republican Party keeps ramming it into his gut and breaking it off at the hilt. And the angry white male just keeps doing it. Well, I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. Why not? Because he's a Democrat. But you're being screwed to the ground. Yeah, but I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. Why not? Because he's a Democrat. Yeah, but you've lost the value of your house. Gas is on and on and on. You don't have a job anymore. What about that? Yeah, but I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. Why not? Because he's a Democrat. It's that echo chamber inside his head where Rush Limbaugh has carved out about a third of his brain, and it's in that little room that corporate America's protection racket sits every single day and tells this angry white male,
well, you know, Barack Obama's the Negro, you know. What's this about Michael J. Fox? What's that? What's up with that? Huh?
And the angry white male doesn't realize that corporate America, who is beating his ass to a bloody pulp, taking away his future, his children's future, and kind of erasing his past, too, that corporate America is willing to pay a hitman like Rush Limbaugh $400 million to do this job on him. And this guy likes to think, yeah, I listen to Rush Limbaugh all the time. You know, he's just like us. Oh, you fool. Jesus God, you fool. John in Oakland writes, Mike, unbelievable, as in not believable. We're supposed to believe in the happy coincidence that those 15 prisoners were easily rescued just as John McCain was visiting, lobbying for the criminal Colombian government. In an even happier coincidence, it's at a time when the Colombian government is in desperate need of good press as they push for a lucrative CAFTA agreement with the U.S. Now, instead of being known as murderers of hundreds of labor leaders, the Colombians are promoted in the American press as Rambo-type heroes. Right. And now the pressure on Congress to reward them, convenient. I'm sure that FARC was compensated handsomely for the cooperation in this farce. George Bush is eager for a CAFTA deal, so he threw in with Colombia's President Uribe, with money stolen from U.S. taxpayers, a nice big pot of gold for FARC. They will probably have rebel prisoners released in addition, surreptitiously. I'm amazed at the gullibility of the mainstream media. How easily they go gaga over this sort of story without an inkling of suspicion. Remember Jessica Lynch? Remember Pat Tillman? The U.S. press deserves some great big lollipops for being obedient little boys and girls and suckers. John in Oakland. Yeah, I watched that today. It was very moving and emotional to see Mrs. Betancourt released. The three American contract workers seem to be suffering from massive Stockholm syndrome. I don't think they were all that happy to be released, except for the fact of going back to see their family. It's apparent to me, maybe you, in watching the three American contract workers who were released after all these years, in perfect health, by the way, according to the people who examine them, they seem to be a little bit, kind of dazed and confused about, wait a second, we've been working with the Colombian rebels for the past 5 years. The oppressor has come in and rescued us? Now, I watched on CNN today a woman who is an expert in the so-called Stockholm Syndrome sit there and say, well, yeah, these men obviously have taken the identity, or not the identity, but taken into their minds the movement that had captured them. And she said, don't expect these guys to stand up and talk about the dirty, rotten FARC. It's not going to happen. But aside from that, watching Mrs. Betancourt kiss her children, that was very moving. I just sat there and teared up a couple of times thinking about how much courage the family had in maintaining a belief that she would come home. I don't think any of these people were ever in danger of being killed, although two of the other contract workers were apparently shot, that's the story, shot execution style. When their spy helicopter collapsed or was shot down. But it was moving to watch Mrs. Betancourt and to listen to the simultaneous translations through French and Spanish on CNN International. So it was very moving. But I think my writer here is onto something. Of course, FARC is known, in addition to being rebels and drug runners and all sorts of devious, nasty things in order to fund their revolutionary movement, they're also kidnappers. And they hold people for ransom. And they're not released until the ransom is paid. Now, I know what the official story is. You know, the Colombian military infiltrated the highest level of FARC. Really? I'll be damned. It's that easy? Okay. And then took a helicopter and landed after instructing the leadership of FARC, we're going to move these hostages to a safer place. Pulled in, scooped up the hostages and two guards, and took them up in the helicopter. And then, boom, everything happened. And the guards were tied up, stripped, left vulnerable. You can imagine what's going to happen to them. And the hostages were safe. And that's a good thing. Hostage holding is a bad thing. It's a terrible thing. It's what we are doing now with hundreds and in Iraq, thousands of people. We are holding hostage. We are holding hostage. Torture is a bad thing, but that's what we do. We do this. We do torture and hostage taking and hostage holding. So the release of these people today was a good thing, but please don't do this. Don't think for a second that the story went down the way the Colombian government and the U.S. media and the Bush crime family are presenting it. Please don't do that.
We take lives when we have to protect the people. That's how I look at it.
Ten before the hour. Now, Kathy sends me an email, not this Kathy, but Kathy who listens, regarding the release of the hostages. Kathy points out Hugo Chavez was calling for this release for the past several months. But, of course, that hasn't been reported at all today, has it? And certainly not in the same article as the word McCain. Here it is. It was posted on June 11th at alternet.org. Here's what it says. Washington's foreign policy establishment and much of the U.S. media was taken by surprise this week when President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela said the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, FARC, should lay down their arms and unconditionally release all of their hostages. The FARC is a guerrilla group that has been fighting to overthrow the Colombian government for more than four decades. Chavez's announcement should not have come as a surprise because he had already said the same thing several months ago. On January 13, for example, Hugo Chavez said, quote, "I do not agree with the armed struggle. And that is one of the things I want to talk to Marulanda," that's the head of FARC who died last March, "I want to talk to him about it," end quote. Chavez also stated his opposition to kidnapping and has made numerous public appeals for the FARC to release their hostages. Chavez also has explained previously that the armed struggle was not necessary because left movements could now come to power through elections, something that was often difficult or impossible in the past because of political repression. And it goes on but the point, and the point Kathy was trying to make in emailing me this this link, have you heard anything today in the warm and fuzzy, and it was warm and fuzzy, news of the release of these hostages, that a person who has influence, not George Bush, they goddamn hate George Bush. Are you kidding me? John McCain? All McCain would do would be to send a squadron to overfly their villages and their jungle hideouts and napalm them or white phosphorus them. Who has the ear of FARC? Let me think. Yeah, Hugo Chavez. And what has Chavez been calling for? You know, the warmongering, greatest threat to South America since Hitler. that's coming. Trust me, that's coming because he has oil and we want his goddamn oil. It's our oil. Happens to be in Venezuela, but it's ours. Chavez has been pressuring FARC. Just the statements pressure FARC. Just the statement, just the public statements. I want to talk to their leader. Well, their leader was killed by whom? Who knows? U.S. hitmen? Colombian military? Mossad? KGB? Nobody knows anymore who does the killing. Do you? Hell no. We don't even know where we have stashed people that we torture. But Hugo Chavez, that miserable, left-wing, undemocratic, nasty ass who has our oil, has been talking about this for months and letting FARC know, yo, time to stop the nonsense. Because now, look at all these countries in South America who have done it, FARC. Now, stop. Organize. Get elected, do it legally, and release the hostages. Chavez has said that several times. So how soon before Limbaugh and the Republicans and the Cheney crime family start to tell us, it's coming, that the connection between John McCain's visit to Colombia and the release of these hostages was a lot more than just coincidental. McCain is already trying to suck up some of the crumbs falling off this table when he suggested today, or he said today, yeah, well, my friends, I was, I met with President Uribe, and is it Uribe, Joe? Yes, it's Uribe. Oh, I met with President Uribe, and we talked about this, my friends, and that's all I can say right now, my friends, because, you know, I'm a senator, and I'm running for president, my friends. He's already said that. So watch what happens within the next few days. Watch. Pay attention. John McCain. In Colombia. Well, I'll be damned. Well, I'll tell you what, Ruth. Let's vote Republican again. Because John McCain is a war hero. And look what he did. He got those people released. Jesus God. It just doesn't stop. Oh, well. Now, when we come back after this break, I have something I want to share with you, an ACLU press release that came out yesterday. It's not good, but nothing on this program is good, right? I'm sorry. I wish it were. Maybe, Kathy, when we come back from this week time off that we're staring at, and by the way, tomorrow is a rerun of the program that had the interview with Bugliosi about indicting Bush for murder. And then next week, Monday is, what's his name? Johnny Wendell. Sorry. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday is Sam Cedar. So, but maybe when we come back, Kathy, what we ought to do is turn this program into Happy Talk. I am getting so sick of this. I really am. You know, I'm like the guy who comes around to the neighborhood in the old days, ringing the bell saying, "Woe is us, 10 more dead. Woe is us, shut your doors, 10 more dead." And then the wagons come by and pick up the people laying on the street who've died of the Black Death. You know, God, maybe we ought to change. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program on Nova M Radio. Interestingly today, I just got an email from Benedict at Large, and he put in his email exactly what I was thinking about today when I heard the expert on CNN. The so-called Stockholm Syndrome, who declared that and defined it? Benedict writes, "Mike, regarding the returned Colombian prisoners, what if the Stockholm Syndrome is a fraud? What if it is actually a capitalist fiction used to describe as brain damage, the natural tendency of people who experience non-capitalist systems to actually prefer those over systems other than capitalism?" I realize that people a lot smarter than I, and maybe, I don't know, Benedict at Large, although Benedict at Large may be a forensic psychologist, who knows? But I'm sure people have studied this and have come to the conclusion that such a thing as Stockholm Syndrome, where you identify with the people who have captured you, I guess. I guess it's always a hostage situation where Stockholm Syndrome applies. So, you know, given all that, Benedict and I are probably left out in the cold. But that thought occurred to me also. What if there is no such thing? What if, in a situation devoid of the constant flow, stream, cacophony of propaganda, such as what America hears every single day from the pig man and his clones, what if, in place of that cacophony, what you heard where the sounds, if you're being held by FARC, the sounds in a rainforest, and their political reorientation, where they sit you down and say, "Okay, listen, of course they always say, "Listen or I'll kill you," but people don't have to listen, do they? Now, 5 years is a long time. We torture people for 5 years. 5 years in a jungle, moving from camp to camp, I don't know what that's like. I have no idea. As far as torture, I don't know what that's like either. I know Christopher Hitchens was able to endure 17 seconds of it. So 5 years is a long time. A lot can happen to your mind. However, When I watch the video today, the live video of Mrs. Betancourt being reunited with her kids, I didn't see a mad woman. I didn't see somebody driven insane by jungle flies and leeches and scorpions and spiders, and that's just the people who held her captive. I didn't see that at all. So I don't know. But Benedict, the thought crossed my mind as well. Now, the ACLU, they released today thousands of pages of documents related to Navy investigations of civilians killed by the so-called coalition forces in Iraq. Now, you know who that is. 90% of that force is us. Including in this release was the investigation of the killing of the cousin of the Iraqi ambassador to the United States. Now, this is in addition to the killing of one of the cousins of Maliki. The press release from the ACLU says, released today in response to a Freedom of Information Act request by the ACLU filed 2 years ago. These records provide a vivid snapshot of the circumstances surrounding civilian deaths in Iraq. Now, let me share some of this with you. An attorney with the ACLU National Security Project says, quote, at every step of the way, the Bush administration and Defense Department have gone to unprecedented lengths to control and suppress information about the human cost of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Our democracy depends on an informed public. And that's why it's so important that the American people see these documents. These documents will help fill the information void around the issue of civilian casualties in Iraq and will lead to a more complete understanding of the prosecution of this war, end quote. Ma'am, Ms. Attorney with the ACLU National Security Project, I'm afraid not. This is a little bit too late, too little too late. We have been conditioned now, this country has, to see Muslims, Iraqis, Palestinians, Iranians, all of them as nothing but terrorists, even the civilians. So we don't care anymore. But maybe somebody out there will pick up on this and start reading. Maybe, you know, if one person gets their mind opened about what the ACLU is releasing, great. Now, they obtained the documents, the ACLU did, from 8 Naval Criminal Investigation Service investigations. One of the files documents the investigation of the death of Muhammad al-Sumadai, a cousin of the Iraqi ambassador to the U.S. In 2006, the ambassador to the U.S. accused Marines of, quote, intentionally, end quote, killing his cousin. And today's records shed light on this investigation for the first time. Among the findings uncovered in this file are conflicting accounts of events, questions of credibility, possible command influence issues, and cover-ups. A retired Army intelligence colonel, who is also a board member of the ACLU, said, quote, as these files remind us, many charges of war crimes in Iraq have not seen the light of day. War crimes involving us. He goes on, there are many discoveries here that should bring pause to any American who cares about this country and hopes to restore the United States' respected role in the world. It is time to bring the facts about this war into the sunlight and end practices that go against our laws and national values, end quote. Again, I would respectfully disagree, Colonel. Our national values have been trashed, if we have any longer. Our national values right now consist primarily of the will or the desire to survive. But I know what you're talking about. Now, through the Freedom of Information Project, the ACLU has made public information on Defense Department policies, has made public the information designed to control information about the human costs of war. And according to the ACLU, the practices that are being conducted against the American public by the Defense Department, i.e. the Bush crime family, include, and most of these you're familiar with, banning photographers on U.S. military bases from covering the arrival of caskets containing the remains of U.S. soldiers killed overseas, paying Iraqi journalists to write positive accounts of the U.S. war effort, write those accounts in their newspapers that are then picked up by American newspapers, inviting U.S. journalists to embed with military units, but requiring them to submit their stories for pre-publication review. Censorship. Erasing journalists' footage of civilian deaths in Afghanistan and refusing to disclose statistics on civilian casualties. Who was it? Tommy Franks? Was it that sorry son of a bitch who at the beginning of this invasion and occupation said,
well, we don't do body counts on Iraqis. We just want the sons of bitches dead, frankly. We don't do body counts. They don't count. We wish y'all would stop counting dead Americans, too. You're going to piss off the people back home. Hot damn, it'll cost me my 4-star or 5th or whatever. Well, how many have I got here? What I got? Oh, never mind.
Now, if you want to look at the documents, go to ACLU.org. ACLU.org. And look around. Well, as a matter of fact, there's an enormous amount of stuff there. Wait a minute. In a separate lawsuit, the ACLU sued for records concerning the abuse of prisoners held in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo. To date, the request has resulted in release of more than 100,000 pages, all of which are available online at ACLU.org/torture, FOIA. ACLU.org/torture, FOIA. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
File, make a promise, and take a while. Hooked up to a satellite. Make sure the world's behaving right. I don't mean to bust your groove. Think it's time we made a move. Freedom isn't free.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Independence Day Eve. How you doing? You okay? Oh, Jesus. What's this? All right. Let's go to Dan, who is listening on Sirius in Waukegan, Illinois. Dan, welcome to the program. Dan?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I'm in the military, and I take no issue with anybody questioning our ethics or our behavior, but the way you came across just now, talking about General Franks,
yeah,
you made it sound like the military in general is a group of knuckle-dragging idiots.
No, and that's what you're doing. What I said was what I did was quote him directly.
Sir, you specifically
what I said what I said was what General Frank said. The military command in this country and the Department of Defense are making people who are non-coms and enlisted people look like fools and idiots, not a talk show host. Get your story straight, Dan, before you call me, and don't confuse my quoting a freak like General Tommy Franks with my own opinion. Thanks, Dan. Happy 4th of July. Gary is calling from Fort Lauderdale, listening on WINZ. Gary, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Gary.
Hey, you know, all I kept thinking of was Reagan tonight when I was watching that FARC in Colombia, you know, the Iran-Contra.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So all I kept thinking of. Anyway, I was going to tell you something that's going on down here right now. Some of the cities in the South Florida area have canceled their fireworks demonstrations because they don't have the money to put them on.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was so ironic that, you know, the way we show our independence on Independence Day is by blowing up fireworks at night. Mm-hmm. And we don't even have money to do that anymore. It's like the terrorists have really won.
Well, the terrorists in the White House have won.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, we're bankrupted.
Yeah. The people that we have labeled as terrorists, who are people that are so infuriated for so long at the policies of Western Europe and the United States, and probably the Soviet Union, too, until they finally decided they've had enough and they strike back. You know, one person's terrorist, another person's freedom fighter. I don't know where I fall on that issue, but who was it shortly after September 11, 2001, who said that if the American public were to understand the reason why or the genesis of the rage that produces people who will commit suicide in order to strike out against the oppressor, we, except in moments of combat, I don't think we've ever had Americans who are willing to sacrifice their lives, in other words, to commit suicide in order to make a political point. But there are people around the world who have been oppressed for so long. What the hell do they have left to lose except their lives? And they're willing to give their lives, just like the founders of this country pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. So, you know, but I hear what you're saying.
It's nice to know they have some character.
I hear that.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Gary. I appreciate your call. Take care.
What news report was it that we saw earlier tonight that quoted Osama bin Laden from 10 or 15 years ago?
Oh, he said when oil gets to $144 a gallon or a barrel,
then the West and the United States in particular will really be punished.
Right.
And everyone laughed because at the time oil was trading at
$9 a barrel. Right. And it was the ravings of an absolute turbaned maniac. And here we are.
We've said it before. I'll say it again. Osama bin Laden never had a better friend than George W. Bush.
That's right.
Look at how many terrorists George Bush has recruited for their organization.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If the United States and Israel had at any time in just the past 40 years, at any time had taken a realistic, honest-to-God approach to the situation that these two countries have caused in the Middle East, and honestly sat down with the aggrieved party, the Palestinians, the Muslims, the Shia, who have been treated like dirt for the past 75 years, and just once sat down and said, okay, look, we've got the power, we can blow you into a million pieces, but all right, let's make a deal. Let's work things out. But no, that's not what we've done. That's not what we've done. And Israel's actions against the Palestinians is the same as America's white European settlers against the Native American people here. We came, they came. We said, God has given us this land. The Israeli settler said, God has given us this land. And we said to the indigenous people, as the Israelis said to the indigenous people, you have got to move. We set up reservations, they have set up reservations. Same story. Now, what would you do if you were a Native American all those years ago, or a Palestinian all those years ago? What would you do? Would you resist? Or would you say, oh, yes, a master, take my home, take my land, take my water supply, take my village, it's yours.
Some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
And I'm feeling the strain.
Everything that's come out of his mouth in 7.5 years has had the net effect of just infuriating me. What a jerk. A.E. writes in, Mike, anybody with a basic understanding of behavioral psychology will tell you that Stockholm Syndrome is a result of the same learning process that leads otherwise decent people to become Christians or Republicans. And regarding a change of format for the show into Happy Talk, I was kind of kidding, but Bob writes in, auto de fe, which literally translates an act of faith, was the ritual execution of heretics by the Inquisition after a confession had been extracted. As the condemned were led to where they would be burned to death, sometimes a painting of a pleasant scene would be held in front of them, filling their field of view so they couldn't see the awaiting stake. Following prayers and attempts to convert the victim to the Roman Catholic faith, burning torches were thrust into the face until the victim's face was burned before wood around the base of the stake was ignited and the victim burned to death. The scenic paintings shown to the condemned were called Felix Fama, translated from the Latin, Happy Talk. Ow! Yeah, there's nothing new or original under the sun whatsoever. Eric is calling from California, listening on KTLK. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going.
I appreciate your show. I appreciate everything you do. And I think if people understood and knew what you know, and I don't want to sound like Rumsfeld here, you know, they would be as irate, if not more so, than you are. And I think you're well justified in everything that you say. I'm a graduate of Kings Point. It's a federal service academy.
Uh-huh.
It's a sister academy to West Point, Annapolis. I come out of there with a naval commission.
Uh-huh.
I've been on Jeff's show, Farias, and
right.
I just got on Randy's. And I'm trying to let people know about what's going on with the Coast Guard.
Okay.
The Coast Guard has moved into Homeland Security, right?
Yes.
When it did in 2003, it took the Uniform Code of Military Justice, military law, Title
right.
10, with it into Homeland Security. They're saying it is a full-blown branch of military. You can go to uscg.mil. It's actually carrying on military tribunals of American civilians here in the United States. They're taken from the Military Commissions Act, the language from it,
mm-hmm.
but they're using the Administrative Procedure Act from 1946. It was passed right after World War II. But they're enforcing it by a branch of military. You've got a branch of military that's actually carrying on trials. It's their court. They pay for it. They construct it. It's their judge. The judge is a lieutenant commander retired in the Coast Guard. The prosecutor is a JAG officer, Judge Advocate General Officer, Corps officer, in the Coast Guard, this newfound branch of military. George Herbert Walker Bush is the chair of the Coast Guard Foundation. George W. Bush is the co-chair of the Coast Guard Foundation. They have set up the Coast Guard as a Gestapo of sorts. And I'm to all the people that are serving in the Coast Guard that jump out of helicopters and save people's lives, God bless you. Keep doing your job.
Sure.
But what these guys are doing with the Coast Guard really needs to be vetted and outed. The Coast Guard has not, as an academy, the individuals going into the academy are not congressionally or senatorial appointed.
Right.
They're not vetted by congressmen or senators. It's all by competition because the academy was set up as a police maritime academy.
Mm-hmm.
They're treating it as if it is West Point or Annapolis or the Air Force Academy or even Kings Point where I went to school. I come out with a naval commission, and I was vetted not only by the congressman, I think Duncan Hunter was involved, and so was Brian Bilbray and me getting into the academy. But the The vetting process also includes the Defense Investigative Services doing a background check on the individuals.
Uh-huh.
That's not been going on for the Coast Guard. And now this 40,000-plus service has been moved into Homeland Security, turned into a branch of military overnight, and they're carrying on military tribunals with JAG officers of the Coast Guard and prosecuting American civilians, tugboat captains, ferry captains, ship's crews, other individuals. And this is exactly what the British did to us in the Revolutionary War. They went after our merchantmen. They went after our commercial fleet. They went after our international fleet. And everything that we are feeling right now, fuel prices and more, even though it's coming from Wall Street, it's coming from, it appears, Bush and the Bush administration, this is all being orchestrated from Europe and the European Union.
All right. Have you taken this to L.A. Times, New York Times, Washington Post? And?
Right. I actually got a copy of transcripts where I say in the transcripts myself, because I've been involved in this, and that's why I've been trying to blow the whistle on it, I gave them to Lou Dobbs. He did nothing with them. I gave them to Tom Hartman. He did nothing with them. Jeff has actually taken it and trying to get it out. What's going on is so gravely serious and so unconstitutional.
Where are these trials being conducted?
They're doing them. You've heard of the fusion centers that they're creating?
No, I have not.
There's 18 regional fusion centers where NASA, the FBI, Treasury Department, IRS, Coast Guard, Homeland Security. One of them, as an example, is the Glenn Anderson Federal Building in Long Beach. All of these guys have now been, all these agencies, federal agencies, are in one building under the General Services Administration, GSA. They don't have their own, you know, independence or autonomy. They're all working out in the same gym, in the same building. So there's no separation of powers whatsoever, separation of duties. The crossover and the bleed over and all of this is just unbelievable. They have broken down all separation of powers, all separation of duties, and I mean they're calling them fusion centers.
Well, let me ask you a question based strictly in ignorance. The first I've ever heard of this. If U.S. law, criminal law, or civil law has been set aside, and the Uniform Code of Military Justice has been made its replacement. How can that be? Because the Uniform Code of Military Justice does not include the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution.
Well, that's not true necessarily. The UCMJ is constitutional. A person like Lieutenant Watata, I don't know if you know his story.
Right, right. We know the story, yes.
Yeah, he was presumed innocent. That is constitutional. They've switched it to where, just like under Bismarck and even under the three Napoleons, and that's where the majority of our law has come from Napoleon's and Bismarck in times of war. This is Napoleonic, to where you are presumed guilty. They are marching people before these drumhead courts and finding them guilty of whatever they want to charge them with.
Well, that's my point. That is not, the presumption of innocence is the foundation of criminal U.S. criminal law.
No, it's not just our foundation. It goes back to the Magna Carta.
Well, yeah, I realize that, but I'm saying the foundation of U.S. law is the presumption of innocence, not the presumption of guilt. And A, B, there has been no declaration of war in this country since 1941.
No, but they're using states of emergency, even local.
I understand that. What kind of people?
No, I mean specifically like Governor Schwarzenegger. He comes out and says that there's a state emergency because of the salmon.
Right.
All of a sudden, they start carrying on, not only moving money and people because there's been a declared emergency, they're carrying on these trials under the smokescreen of these declared emergencies.
All right. What kind of people are being tried and for what reason?
I'm one. I'm a naval officer, a graduate of Kings Point, and the Coast Guard, which I'm not in, never served in, they're prosecuting me as a civilian, an alleged civilian. They had a JAG officer in the Coast Guard prosecuting me. The judge, this Lieutenant Commander Brzezinski, he's also involved in a case for the Marine Fisheries. They're using these administrative law judges that are actual executive branch hearing officers as if they're real judges from the judiciary.
Well, what have you been charged with?
You don't even want to know.
Sure I do.
With the context of what you were saying about the show and changing it to a a little bit different venue and going to some happy talk.
I was kidding.
No, I know, but I know. But they've charged me with, quote-unquote, being depressed.
Being depressed?
Yes.
I don't get that.
I joke you not.
Surely that's not what the charges, that's not how the charges read.
Yeah, it is. And they've been prosecuting me for the last 5 years at government expense.
All right, look, Eric, I'll tell you what. Send me an email to me, if you would, whatever information you want me to have.
Jeff Farias has a bunch of the information, plus there's people like Richard Block with the National Mariners Association. He's been fighting this from his own venue where they're attacking our inland waterways, tugboat captains, ferry captains. They've already decimated our international fleet, our merchant marine.
Right.
It's gone. 97% of all cargo comes in on foreign flag now and leaves on foreign flag. They're now attacking our inland waterways, the Great Lakes, Mississippi, and they're trying to replace these people with foreigners.
All right, Eric, send me links or information, and I promise you we will get the information out. I will talk about it on this program, and send me an email address how I can get in touch with you. All right?
Peace. Thanks,
all
Mike.
Right.
Keep doing what you're doing. Happy 4th.
Same to you, Eric. Holy Jesus, really? Let's see how quick the information comes. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
One more murder in this town. Don't mean a thing, just lock your doors and drive around.
It's about 8:30 before the hour. Okay, well, some of you know more about Eric than I do, those of you who listen to Ferris' show. Bill in Ottawa, Canada, writes, Mike, I found some data on fusion centers, and Jesus save us, something called the Matrix. I'm telling you, these fools think this is all some big game. I read this article quickly, and he gives me a link, but have no analysis. I had not heard of them either, but it is clear that they are trying to integrate all the data, Department of Homeland Security and otherwise, into a giant database. Can this be total information awareness 2.0? Who knows? Bill from Ottawa. Well, we'll check it out. I want to see what this guy sends me. And, we'll go from there. All right, now here, somebody sent me a link to an article about, he's a lieutenant. Oh, well, Lieutenant Eric in his last name, U.S. Navy Reserve. All right, well, you know, like I said, I'll certainly take a look at it. I mean, what do I know? Huh. Weird stuff. But I don't discount anything. I don't discount anything that the Bush crime family would do. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Beth writes, Mike, I heard your caller story before months ago. I worried about it at the time, but couldn't seem to get any additional information about it, so I couldn't prove to myself its veracity. We'll see what happens. This one. We're going to take phone calls. We do have a whole bunch of open lines. So if you want to join in the discussion here, 800-989-1480. After the break at the top of the hour, we'll just do phone calls, I guess. An important victory for consumers. Yesterday, the Michigan Supreme Court unanimously ruled that the Wayne County, that would be Detroit, the Wayne County treasurer violated a 75-year-old woman's constitutional right to due process by foreclosing on her house without notifying her. The justices noted that the county treasurer did not send a notice to Stella Seiden's Birmingham, Michigan home, despite having her address readily on hand on the deed to the property. Instead, the county sent notices to the old address of this woman's, the 75-year-old woman's dead mother, who had been, years ago, co-owner of the property. Public Citizen and local counsel John Herman had argued that the return of the certified mail notices should have been a red flag that the notice had failed. After she lost the property, which had provided her retirement income, Ms. Seiden sued the county. The trial court ruled against her. So did the appellate court. But the Michigan Supreme Court reversed the lower court decisions and found that the lower court's rulings conflicted with the U.S. Supreme Court's 2006 decision in Jones versus Flowers, another case in which Public Citizen lawyers challenged the lack of notice of a home foreclosure. Disaster capitalism. What did I read the other day? There are articles all over the place now in the established press and online of the vampires, the ghouls, the eaters of dead flesh, the people who wait for this kind of tragedy and then move in. The people who gather on courthouse steps. Why do people do that? It's predatory. It's sick. It's disgusting. And the people make the argument, well, Molloy, come on, back up. These are people who would like to get a house, but they can't afford it. So they're just stepping in to bid on a house that's been repossessed. Well, why do that? Don't you understand that's exactly what the banking and financial conspiracy wants? We'll take it away from this one and sell it to that one. And when that one fails, we'll take it back again. Jesus Christ, why do people show up to buy repossessed houses? What kind of ghoulish activity is that? I mean this. There may be, although I've never seen them, some people who otherwise could not afford to buy a house standing on the courthouse steps when these sons of bitches come out and read the list of repossessed properties. But the people I've seen, here in Georgia anyway, are usually large white people who just stand there. God damn them. They just stand there like vultures. It reminds me of vultures who hover and land, and there's someone near dead. And the vultures are waiting till they can move in and start eating. Jesus Christ, I hate this. Predatory capitalism defined. All right, your phone calls when we come back after the break. Be there or be square. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. My name is Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Just this, and then we will go to your phone calls. I was struck today by a New York Times editorial called "The Imprecise Meaning of War," and it's about the war profiteering by huge companies, most of which are directly connected to the Bush crime family, whether it's Blackwater or Kellogg Brown and Root or Halliburton or whatever. And the Times makes the point that Congress needs to close this hole in a law regarding against war profiteering. And that, of course, is companies that piss on this country and piss on the uniform and the flag and the soldiers and the taxpayer. They are the kind of people who should be taken out after a quick trial and executed. I'm serious. I am absolutely serious. War profiteers who do to the U.S. military. Now, I realize we have no business being in Iraq, but we're there. War profiteers who do to the U.S. military what Kellogg Brown and Root, Halliburton, Blackwater, and the rest of these these filthy companies have done. The leaders of these companies should be put on trial under wartime conditions and, if found guilty, executed summarily. I mean that, and I am not pro-death penalty. But this is beyond the pale. This is right up there with raping children. This is right up there with nuking, napalming, dumping white phosphorus on civilians. This makes me almost insane. Now, Congress needs to close this hole. Why? Because the latest conflict in both Afghanistan and Iraq, and you can work all the way back to World War II. These are not declared wars. We have not had a congressional declaration of war in this country, as you all know, since December, 10th, 1941. Now, as the Times says, the anti-fraud law dating to World War II allows prosecution of contractors up to 3 years after a war ends. But this statute of limitation was omitted. I wonder who made that happen. From the resolutions authorizing military force in Iraq and Afghanistan, neither of which has a formal war declaration, as you know. Investigators say the current war fraud runs into untold billions, including, and this is why I say the death penalty in this instance is justified, including faulty ammunition, unprotected vehicles, bulletproof vests that are not bulletproof. What kind of pig does that? The Times says investigative officials and the Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction have testified that they're hampered by the ongoing conflicts and need more time to catch contract thieves after these conflicts end. If McCain becomes president, these conflicts will never end, ever. Now, the Times says the solution is a bipartisan bill clarifying that war, quote, quote, absolutely includes congressional authorizations of military force. This is the part also that makes me furious. Does the Congress, the executive branch, and these filthy goddamn contractors, do they not understand that when we commit 150,000 troops to two wars, it is a war? Oh, my God. Fixing this also allows prosecution for 5 years after war. The Senate Judiciary Committee just approved this measure, and the rest of Congress should quickly do it, or else the loophole will continue, and war contractors will continue their free-for-all with no criminal accountability. Those are the words of Senator Charles Grassley, the bill's Republican sponsor. Oh, I mean it. I mean it. War tribunals for camel drivers in Afghanistan? Give me a goddamn break. How about war tribunal trials for American contractors who are doing this? We don't care. We don't care. Nobody cares. Billions have been stolen. How many soldiers have died? I realize we shouldn't be there, but how many soldiers have died because these filthy, rotten private contractors have deliberately given American soldiers equipment that was useless? Jesus God, what kind of a sump hole do we live in? Now, the Times says the Justice Department is reportedly sitting on a backlog of more than 900 cases in which whistleblowers have accused government contractors of billions in fraud in both military and domestic spending. 900 cases. That's the backlog. Jesus Christ! 900 cases of fraud, war profiteering, theft. And who's going to do anything about this? Nobody. What do you want to bet that this bill does not pass, even though it's sponsored by a Republican? What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet that the Cheney ghouls in the Senate and the House will step up and say, well, you know, we can't interfere with our military commanders, and this has nothing whatsoever to do with military commanders? Oh, my God. I saw this one today in the New York Times, and Washington Post has reported on this. And this is the part that infuriates me. These filthy pig bastards, just like the hedge fund operators, just like Countrywide and some of these mortgage companies. This country's like an abattoir. Just bring in the cows and slaughter them. Bring in the pigs and cut their throats. Why does this happen? Why does this happen? I understand greed. I understand greed. I really do. I guess people can make an argument, capitalists can make an argument, that in some instances greed is good. But in an occupation zone, in wars, where you are deliberately and consciously ripping off, murdering American troops, adding to the chaos and confusion so the innocent civilians, I say execute the sons of bitches. I say drag them out of their corporate executive suites, put them on trial, and if they are found guilty, shoot them. God damn it, shoot them. Do I sound like Michael Reagan? No. Put them on trial. And if they're found guilty, because they are responsible for how many deaths? How many deaths? How many soldiers have died? How many Marines have been blown to pieces? How many Iraqi civilians have been turned into jelly because of these filthy war profiteering sons of bitches, the largest number of which are directly connected to Dick Cheney? How many? 10? 100? 1,000? 2,000? 10,000? These people are like the German corporations that produced Zyklon B. And yet we just sit back and, you know, well, we can't interfere with the workings of our military. This has nothing to do with the military. The military are victims in this. How many soldiers have died? How many Marines? Because of Dick Cheney's Kellogg Brown and Root and Halliburton and this crazy son of a bitch that runs Blackwater. How many? Huh? And DynCorp. And all these private... We have 130,000 contractors. Civilian contractors in Iraq. 130,000. Almost as many troops. And no responsibility, no culpability, nothing. Absolutely nothing. We will rip you off. We will stick it in you, soldier, and break it off in you, the middle of your back. We will sever your spine. We will take your legs. We will remove your arms. We will take half of your brain and go to hell. We're in it for the money, G.I. We don't belong. We don't belong.
gonna be a delicacy.
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Yeah, I get pissed off about some of that stuff. I mean, I really, really, really do get pissed off. Especially the kind of ghouls, vampires, filth. How can this country produce people who will join the military? For whatever reason, and we've got to understand something. A lot of these people join the military because they really do believe, you know, they're victims of Stockholm Syndrome, if you want to put it that way, but they really do believe that they're there defending freedom. So you have those kids over there, and then over here, you have these predatory sons of bitches who look at all of it as nothing but how the P&L statement winds up. If we can screw these soldiers at 10 cents a mile, we'll make $13 million. Screw them. If we can take away half of their Kevlar vests, we make $50 million. Screw them. Take it away. To me, those are the kind of people who simply do not deserve to live. If they're found guilty, you know, put them on trial. I said tribunals. I don't know if I take that back or not. Let the military, who suffers from these pigs, put them on trial. Why not? Well, because, Mike, you don't believe that. Okay. Bring them back to the United States. Make them understand, and their attorneys understand, that they are facing the death penalty, and put them on trial. If they're found guilty, then it's up to the jury. Do they get life without parole or the death penalty? Take your pick. I hate these people. They are not Americans. I don't know what they are. International bandits, they don't give a goddamn how much blood is shed as long as they get their money. And they steal it. They steal it from the soldier. They steal it from the civilian. They steal it. They're thugs. Bastards. That one really gets me. That one really gets me. It does. I can get all worked up, or as we say in the South, all head up about Bush crime family. But these are people scattered all over the country who run these filthy companies. Corporate America. And companies like Kellogg Brown and Halliburton, not only do they murder our soldiers, but they hide their corporations offshore so they don't have to pay their filthy, sick employees self-employment tax or Social Security tax. These are the lowest of the low, the worst of the worst. Throughout history, the war profiteers, they were the ones who were at the bottom of the dung heap, covered in maggots, willing to sacrifice their own fellow countrymen. They don't care. So why should we? Son of a bitch. 900 case backlog. Do you think the Bush Justice Department is going to pursue these pigs? Back to your phone calls. Jesus. Jan is calling from New York, listening on the internet. Jan, welcome to the program.
Hi, a belated happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
I'm actually calling about how you began the show with Colombia.
Yes, okay.
Because I've been keeping an eye on France for many years, and Madame Bonacor has been a big issue there for this entire 6 years.
Is that how you say her name?
Bonacor,
okay.
Sarkozy made her a personal issue and has actually flown to Colombia on her behalf.
Uh-huh.
Now, the thing that a lot of people, I haven't heard it in the news, so I think you should know that when she was captured in 2002, she was running for president against Uribe.
Yes.
And he is now wanting the Constitution of Colombia changed so he can run again.
You don't suppose he had something to do with her capture?
Well, he got to be president, and she's enormously popular in both countries. She's a dual national.
Mm-hmm.
When she got off the Republic of France plane in Colombia, some of her first words were, I am Colombian, I am French.
Mm-hmm.
And the man who greeted her there, Bernard Kirchner, he happens to be the man who founded the organization, Doctors Without Borders. He's a true hero. This is a magnificent person.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I thought you might find this all interesting.
Yeah, I know, well, I don't know the details. I know that Mrs. Betancourt was running for the presidency of Colombia. I know that she was seen as a threat to Uribe. But the stuff that you're sharing with us, I wasn't aware of. Can you hold on a second?
Sure.
All right, we have to do a break here, Jan. Let me put you on hold, and we'll come back because I want to hear some more about this. It's getting to the point, isn't it, that in South American politics, as that continent goes through these changes from right-wing militaristic repressive regimes into populist left-wing governments, that nothing, like the Middle East, is what it appears to be. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Each road that I walk down reminds me of you. This whole town is haunted. There'll never be anything to do. Precious.
25 before the hour, we're talking with Jan.
Yes.
In New York City. All right, back to the FARC rescue today.
Well, there's also something that nobody seems to be aware of, is that three, four months ago, President Chavez gave a huge speech saying that the FARC should disband, that it was passé to be a rebel.
Right. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the program tonight.
But no, he used the word disband.
Right.
And passé.
Mm-hmm.
So little of that has been spoken of. Uribe wants to run for president again. And so my first thought is he thought this might be a good move to try to endear him to Colombians who don't want any more of him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when Madame Betancourt was being interviewed by the French press, one of the things she did say, she's about 20 pounds heavier than she was in those photos that were released of her last, was that she wants to run for president of Colombia still. So I hope she's on a plane to France.
Well, after having endured what she went through, whatever it was, and I'm not suggesting that...
She was chained by the neck.
Right. I know early on that was the case. Until she writes her memoirs or a biography of what happened to her, I think it's all speculation. But if she decides to go back to Colombia and run for the presidency, I would... if I had her ear, I would say, Benazir Bhutto, just be careful what you do, because they will kill you. It doesn't make any difference if you're man or woman. It doesn't make any difference if you carry a rosary in your hand, as she did today. They will kill you. So, anyway, you've given us some information here tonight. Thank you very much that I had not a whole lot of information about. Thanks, Jan.
I thought you might find it interesting.
It is. It is very interesting, and I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Mark is calling from Illinois. Mark?
Hey, what's up, Mike?
You are.
Hey, I've been, I started listening to your show recently. I was kind of been listening to the guys that you call pigs.
Uh-huh.
But I think I'm coming around to this point of view because something in my soul just tells me that it's kind of all wrong what they're saying.
I hear you.
But the thing is, I mean, I'm not terribly well informed, though. So I honestly, I mean, just my gut kind of tells me that you're correct. But I mean, where would I go to find information about?
Well, I guess the quickest source to go to my website, MikeMalloy.com, and we put up there the links to the stories that we cover, and just click on the links, do some reading, and then follow wherever those links take you. You will not inform yourself if you listen to mainstream media.
I'm aware of that now.
With a couple of exceptions, anything written by any writer from McClatchy newspapers is usually well worth the time you spend reading it, and they don't lie. But anything beyond that, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox, parts of the New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times are worth reading, but you have to be able to discriminate between the garbage and the stuff that's going to inform you. So what I recommend is you go online, you go to the internet. That's where the truth and a lot of BS is being published right now. There's an awful, just the Mount Everest of garbage that's on the internet. But there's also a Mount McKinley of truth. So that's the best place to go. There are so many websites to go to that, I couldn't even list them all tonight. But a good starting point, if you want to do it, a good starting point is to go to
your website.
Yeah, go to MikeMalloy.com. Or another good one is to, I don't know if you got something right, and you might, people tell me things and I forget immediately, but BartCop.com, TV News Lies, that's a good one. TV News Lies, is that .com or .org? Oh, whatever, it's one or the other.
Is there a such thing as the liberal media? I mean,
No.
Because all I hear is guys like O'Reilly and Hannity say, well, the liberals, et cetera. And, I'm looking around, and who are these people that they're talking about?
I mean,
that's what prompted me. Then I got serious, and then I figured out they had a left channel.
Right.
And then I came across your program. I remember that one night you were trashing that scumbag Oliver North.
Yeah.
And I just really, really kind of enjoyed that. I'm a former Marine myself, and I thought he was a disgrace. But who are these people that they're talking about? I mean, do they really exist?
There hasn't been a liberal media in this country since the corporate takeover. And I would say there's not been a liberal media in this country since maybe 40 years ago. It is totally corporatist. I wouldn't even call it conservative. It's beyond conservative. It's corporatist. So much of what you hear, whether it's Limbaugh or O'Reilly, And Charlie Gibson on ABC, Brian Williams on NBC. It's not just the obvious right wingers. It's also the ones that most Americans come to trust and say, well, I'm going to watch NBC News tonight. I'm going to watch Katie Couric. I'm going to watch ABC. They are just as bad, not because they're as insane as Limbaugh or O'Reilly, but because their presentation seems almost rational. And yet the stories that their managing editors and most of those anchors have a hand in selecting the stories are so far from the information that we really need and so slanted in favor of corporate America. Keep in mind that NBC is owned by GE. You know that.
Yeah, I know that. I've noticed that it seems like the same people own, the same people that own the military industrial complex.
Right.
Own these news networks, and it's it just seems to be they wouldn't broadcast stuff against their interests.
That's it exactly. Why should corporate America tell the truth when the truth would bring them down. So, you know, take I'll give you another example. Armed Forces Radio. That's an example of pure propaganda. Voice of America, pure propaganda. CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, Fox, pure propaganda. You really have to work, Mark, to get the sources, and God knows I'm not a good source. All I do is put up links to stories that we cover, and I expect that if people who listen to this program go to the links to say, well, let's see what Malloy is talking about, they will follow links from that story, and then you get into you go down Alice in Wonderland's you go down the hole into
like the Matrix.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. That's even better. So, you know, keep making the effort. Good for you. You know, my history was pretty much the same as yours. So.
What really got me questioning was I was reading about the Nazis and Hermann Göring, especially.
Right.
And they were talking about basically the technique, like it works in any kind of government.
The big lie, the technique of the big lie. And
that
this is,
too, but as far as going, like, making us think there's a perceived danger and then
right.
denouncing those people who are so-called pacifists and who are not with the protection of the homeland.
Well,
and it works.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it works in any kind of government. It has nothing to do with, like, the fact
right.
that you might be communist or democratic or...
Well, let me just say this.
But then I started really listening to O'Reilly and Hannity and all them, and it seems like they're using the exact same technique.
Well, you're halfway home, Mark, because you know you've taken off the blinders, you coughed up the blue pill, and apparently have taken the red pill, which is good. I never get that right. I think the red pill is the one that
yeah, you put the blue pill. Like I should have taken the blue pill.
Yeah, the blue pill keeps you in the matrix. The red pill gets you out. So good for you. You'll figure out how to do this, and I would never presume to tell you how to think. Just keep doing what you're doing and call in once in a while, okay?
All right, appreciate it, Mike.
All right, take care.
Keep on walking away, buddy.
All right, thank you. Semper Fi, Mark. Oy. Trey is calling from Dallas, Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Trey.
Yeah, hey, Mike. It occurs to me that Republican voters can't be allowed to walk around freely without any fear of their actions, of their votes. They walk around supremely competent, Republicans and the people who vote for them, supremely competent that they can get away with anything, that the Constitution doesn't matter, the Sermon on the Mount doesn't matter, until they have the misfortune of popping off in my presence, nobody ever questions them. And but anyway,
hey Trey, hold on. Let me do a break, right. And I'll come back. Hold on, stay right there.
From Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, will it ride in every American heart at a time we stand and say?
It's about 10 before the hour. We're talking to Trey, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio in Dallas. All right, where were we?
Well, the reason I called was because I'm really disappointed in this big contract that Rush Limbaugh got. Basically, my dad and I's relationship is estranged because of Rush Limbaugh. He worships him, and
I
try to tell him he's crazy for listening to him, and I get thrown out of the house, and we're not speaking anymore.
I hear you.
And but all these people who evidently listen and worship to him, of course, people out in the rural areas, that's all they have to listen to is Rush Limbaugh. I mean, don't they, why don't they, like me, take a second to think about the way this guy lives. He does his radio show out of a dark basement out of his home in Florida. And, the guy's strange all the way around, the things he's been caught at doing. And does it seem strange to you that the most successful radio host in the entire world never comes out of his home in Florida and lives like a hermit there?
The thing, and I believe this, Trey, I believe this with everything in my brain. The truth is, eventually Limbaugh he was caught on the drug scam and somehow managed to avoid it by paying off the prosecutor in his county or whatever. He's a pill-popping freak. Once he stopped taking the pills, he blew up again like a balloon. But the day is coming when this man is going to be caught on one of his jaunts to the Dominican Republic, where he takes his Viagra pills with him. And you remember he got caught coming back with Viagra in a bottle that he didn't have a prescription for. What does that tell you? I believe, and I honestly believe this, that this guy is a child molester. He has sex with underage girls. And I think the time is going to come when that is going to be revealed. And this guy is going to fall like a huge wad of cow dung. He's just going to fall and fall and splat against the pavement somewhere. I know this is coming. I know it is. So that's what I anticipate. And I know that sounds like Schadenfreude. I know that... you shouldn't celebrate somebody else's downfall. It's borders on evil. In this case, I don't give a goddamn. I really don't. I couldn't care less. I hope this man falls in such a way that he takes down the whole right-wing radio structure with him, including that disgusting Talkers magazine that is nothing but a whorehouse for these people. So no offense to sex workers. So that's my opinion on that. Trey, thanks. And thanks to the crew who did the show all this week and last week and next week. Well, not next week. Everybody that contributed, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and, of course, our executive producer, Catherine Bay. Tomorrow night is a rerun of the program that we did with Vince Bugliosi about his book on indicting George W. Bush for murder. Next week... Johnny Wendell will substitute Monday and from KTLK on Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, Sam Cedar from wherever Sam broadcasts from now, I guess upstate New York. We'll be back live Monday, July 14th. All right. And I don't want any nonsense while I'm gone. Okay. You all behave. Back to your phone calls. John is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, John, we got about a minute here. Go ahead, pal.
Okay, Mike, every so often the government crows about something it's done. This happened in early 1960s when NASA came out and told us that they placed a satellite in orbit that with sophistication that it could read the license plate
right.
On an automobile traveling on the highways.
I remember that.
And... this is 45 years ago, the technology, I think, that God knows what they can do now.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a certainty that the rat bastards have known. They knew where Saddam Hussein was. They knew where Kwesi Mfumi was. They know where all the Al-Khazar leaders are.
Mm-hmm.
They know all these damn people are. They've known where Osama bin Laden has been from day one. They probably know the toilet paper he uses and how much. So all this damn business that goes on about Osama bin Laden is crap, because in my view, Osama bin Laden did his job, what he was supposed to do for 9/11. And anybody that thinks otherwise, I think they need their head examined.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here, John. I said yes, I agree. I agree. They could find him tomorrow if he still exists.
Yeah. I think he has a $25 million on his head, something like that.
I think they've raised it maybe to $100 million, but they're not going to find him. It's just like Goldstein in the novel 1984. He's become a fictional character. and very valuable to Big Brother in this country, which is corporate America. We have a minute left. Not even that. Marge is calling from Indiana. Marge, you got time to say hi, Mike. Have a happy 4th.
Hi, Mike. Have a happy 4th.
Same to you. Drive safely, all right?
And by all means, you know, watch out for those fireworks.
Oh, I definitely will.
They're, you know.
They're what?
They're sparkly and they're hot and they burn things.
It sounds like my wife.
Hi, Kathy. How you doing?
All right, Marge, we got to go. Take care. Behave yourself.
You too.
All right.
Bye.
All right. That's it for tonight. We have about 10 seconds left, but what did she say? Sparkly and...
Your sparkly hot wife should have prepared some sort of patriotic going out theme here.
No,
but
no.
I'm tired. I washed the car today. And
I know you did, and you did a good job, by the way.
You folded the laundry, and I want to thank you for that.
I love to see you wash the car in the driveway. There's something about that that is, I don't know.
I was wearing a bathing suit.
Is that what it was? Where's, aren't we going to play the Friday music? I'm Going Straight to Hell.
See, I get just Alzheimer's when we do Friday music on another night.
I get it.
Makes me nervous.
All right, True Seekers, have a good weekend. Be safe, all right? I'll see you the 14th. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.